The Holy Gospel according to Matthew. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is this child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his rising, his star at its rising, and have come to pay homage to him." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is the shepherd of my people.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word, so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they heard the king, they set out. And there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. The day after Christmas, I was still a little bit hazy from all the excitement around here, so I was quite happy that my mom had convinced me to take most of the day off. We had the chance to share the gospel with over 1,300 people on Christmas, between Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. It was incredible, so thank you to the many of you who did things like bake communion bread or provide hospitality through ushering, or just by your presence here. It was a gift to be together and to hear that gospel message from Luke. My parents were in town, and I was grateful to have them for the first time in 8 years to be with them at Christmas time. Mom made Christmas dinner for me and some friends. And as I was preparing to come into church for a few hours on the 26th, I did what I often do before work, which was I had a cup of coffee and I sat and scrolled through the news and checked Facebook. I don't know if that's part of your tradition at all, or just to sit and have a moment as you begin your day, but that's what I was doing. And I found a news story that should have just been an absolutely non-issue. It should have just been a blip. But for some reason, there was all of this angst and frustration that started boiling in me, and I was getting angry. And the headline was this: "What to do with your Christmas tree now that Christmas is over?" That shouldn't have made me that mad. "What to do with your Christmas tree now that Christmas is over" is not an offensive headline by any means. But I was pretty upset. And now, just a PSA, it's never a good idea to post in the comments of a news story on social media. Ever. Just know that now, trust me. No good comes from writing in the comments section on a news story. So I resisted, but if I would have written something, I would have said in all caps, "Christmas isn't over!" Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Christmas isn't over. And today it still isn't over. Today is the 12th day of Christmas, like the song implies. It's nearly a two-week season. Some of my notes actually suggest having a Christmas pageant on the last day of Christmas before Epiphany. Well, you can imagine how good that would go over with everyone. So it would seem that the culture and the calendar have us moved forward beyond Christmas. I was even at the store the other day and I saw all the Valentine's candy is out and ready to go. We're just a couple of days into 2020, which is just weird that we are in the 20s. The snow and the cold has us firmly planted in the feeling of winter. And this last week, the kids went back to school, and we're all trying to eat things that don't contain sugar for just a little while. While the world has moved on, from the celebration of the incarnation, the church hasn't yet. You walk into our sanctuary today, it feels a little bit like a snow globe. The Christmas trees are still up, the poinsettias are still here, the lights are still on the trees. And I like that, because we still need to celebrate Christmas and all it means for us. We need a little time to settle into the good stuff, the meat and potatoes of the story. Long after the sentimentality wears off and the hard work of putting together beloved traditions has come and gone, there's still this story that continues, and this time in Matthew's gospel. And yet in my planning, I couldn't decide today between the second Sunday of Christmas and Epiphany. And there was something in me that was pulling us forward to tomorrow, which is the day of Epiphany, often celebrated quite well in other parts of the world, but here maybe it's a little bit more of an understated celebration. The Epiphany is all about celebrating God's presence, God's manifestation in various ways. And so while Christmas is about Emmanuel, God dwelling with us in human skin, in the incarnation, who from birth to death would experience solidarity with the human experience, taking on our burdens, and that his presence would be the solidarity that we would long for with God, Epiphany is about something similar but different. Epiphany is about the wise men, unspecified in number, although most nativity sets say that there are three, one representing each gift given, the gold and the frankincense and the myrrh. And Epiphany takes us from the celebration of the incarnation and spreads the same concept but deepens it. God's presence made manifest in many other ways that God has known. In the gift of baptism, in the miracle of water turned to wine, and in light. Light that permeates darkness. Light that is so powerful that it cannot be overcome by anything. The light of Christ that is with us always, to and through the end. Of this Epiphany star, there are a few things I'd like to ponder with you today. First, the wise men had been watching for the star at its rising. Listen to that word again. At its rising. All the way at the beginning of Matthew, in the Nativity story, we have resurrection language. The star, the light, is rising. They had noticed it, and they'd been watching it from the beginning. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the word stopped was emphasized as it described the star multiple times. So ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw where the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. And then following their experience of the Christ child, the wise men are warned in a dream to go home by an alternate road. So of this Epiphany star and the story of these wise men, there are a few things that I think it can mean for us today. First, with the wise men, to be about the work of seeing the Christ child. And just like the kids were literally looking for the Christ child, for pictures of Jesus, it's not that easy. But we do know that Jesus is where he promises to be. And one place he promises to be is where two or three are gathered. Two or three, or in this case, several, are gathered. Sometimes I think it is the closest two or three people in our lives that have the ability to speak on behalf of God the most, which is both burden and blessing, because sometimes we get it wrong. And sometimes the ones who are closest to us are the ones that we maybe hurt the most. But also the ones who are closest to us oftentimes have the capacity to bear the Christ child to us through the word made flesh. That word of challenge when you know things can be better and you can go about the route of tough love. That word of comfort through the question, simple question, how was your day? And the conversation that you can have at the end of the night. Oftentimes, a Christ is revealed to us where two or three are gathered, and it's not just here at church. Sometimes it's the closest two or three colleagues that we have in our workforce, the closest two or three friends that we make sure to meet with on a regular basis, the ones that we know time can elapse and we can still connect and hear a word of life-giving good news from them. Jesus promises to be there. Jesus also promises to be in the least of these. In Matthew 25, we hear a litany of where Jesus shows up. When I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick and in prison, you visited me. As we do unto the least of these, we do to Christ. Christ is where he promises to be, where two or three are gathered, but also in the least of these. So we have a chance to make a difference in this world. And it's something that we can do in big ways and in little ways. But there are often tangible ways that we can be a part of making this difference through the work of St. Andrew. I'm continually inspired by those of you who volunteer at the Warming Center. I'm continually inspired by those who aren't in this room right now teaching Sunday school. And I'm continually inspired by the way that we walk with each other through life at its highs and its lows. Christ promises to be in the least of these. And then finally, Christ promises to be in the bread and wine. We gather around the sacraments weekly, and sometimes when you gather around the sacraments weekly, it seems like maybe they lose their little bit of oomph, as though maybe when I was little, we had it once or twice a month, and it was something we would look forward to was Communion Sunday. But we have it every time we gather because Christ promises to be in that bread and wine. So with the wise men, we seek where Christ has stopped and promises to be, and we receive that today. And secondly, we give witness to his rising and resurrected life. So what does that mean? As the star rose, the wise men followed it until it stopped. And sometimes faith becomes that same journey where we're looking for the place or the thing where God has revealed our purpose and our role in life. It was occurring to me this week as I had the opportunity to walk with several people through different aspects of life that our resurrected life begins much sooner than we all believe. That our resurrected life begins in baptism. And so we all have a chance to offer for someone else a star at its rising and the resurrection that's happening inside of us. It's this resurrection that sustains us and stirs us because we know that we have hope. We're not without hope that God has taken care of the things that are most threatening and scary for us. And that this leads us to my final point, which is that the wise men trusted their dream. They trusted that warning and a dream to not return to Herod, who is seeking the death of the Christ child. What does it look like for us to trust the presence of Christ, even in our own hearts and guts and our own dreams? Where God speaks to us sometimes the most intimately is in the quiet moments right before bed or when we're driving in the car and we know clearly what it is that we are being called to do. Like the wise men who return home by a different road, a road that they've never gone on, sometimes where God calls us is not where we would expect. But certainly Christ is where he promises to be, where two or three are gathered. In the least of these, in the bread and wine, and finally, when Jesus says in the Great Commission, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Thanks be to God. Amen.